Hi, I'm Christy Hurt, the founder of The Collab. We are a collective of brand professionals sharing our career stories. Every week, we pair up two members and they interview each other, so you'll get to hear one episode this week and one next week. You can join us too. Sign up at jointhecollab.com and then tell your story.
Hello, and thank you for having us, Collab. Thrilled to be here with one of my besties, Lisa DiNapoli, who's based in New York City and is a children's wear designer, currently freelance. Lisa, I know some of these things about you, and I think I'm probably going to learn more today. If you could tell the audience where you grew up and where you went to school.
Sure. Hi, and thank you. Thank you, Celeste. Thank you, Collab. It's so fun to be here with Celeste today. As Celeste said, I am a children's wear designer by training. I grew up in a small coastal town in Rhode Island, and I went to the local public school and then quickly discovered that I had this passion for, I always drew and painted and did all kinds of artsy things, and quickly discovered that I loved fashion. My family was always making fun of me. They said I would pull anything from anyone's closet, my father, my brother, my sister, and just make an outfit out of it. So I put the two together at a pretty early age, like probably early high school, and decided that I wanted to become a fashion designer. So it's always been a very singular idea that I had, something I knew I wanted to do. And I ended up going to Parsons School of Design to study fashion design. So I came to New York City, fresh out of high school, young 18-year-old, and started on that career path. And it was amazing. I met some of the best people, including Celeste's husband. And I really, really learned. And in thinking back about, you know, my time there, I didn't go into that school thinking that I knew anything about it. And in fact, I didn't have a lot of confidence about fashion design at all. But what I had was the desire to learn. And what I did was work really, really hard to learn as much as I could. And I transformed so much. I got, you know, to the point where I had instructors who were just like, wow, what happened? You know, you've come so far. And so I think what the best thing that I got out of that experience was confidence, because I really did leave there knowing that I could do it. You know, I had the confidence that I was a good designer and I could do it. So for that, I'm very thankful that I had that experience. And then, you know, I always had this thing in my mind that I was always going to leave New York. Two more years, five more years, and here I am.
You and me both, we're stuck here.
It's a hard place to leave. I always say it. It's a really hard place to leave. But straight out of school, I started in women's wear, which was the path for everyone out of Parsons. Like, you were really trained as a women's wear designer. And I quickly learned that I liked women's wear, but there was something always that was like the attitude, the showboating. There was something about it that never quite sat with me. I wasn't fully on board. And I was laid off from my first job. And I kind of just really blindly said, well, I need to work. And I went for one freelance interview in the children's wear building in New York, which I did not even knew existed. Like, they didn't talk about children's wear at Parsons. And I went to the interview and it went okay. But what I did, I had my portfolio in hand. So I just started literally knocking on doors. Like, hi.
With your newly found confidence?
Yeah. Hi. Do you need a fashion designer? I mean, literally. And this one woman gave me a project. Like, just looked at my portfolio and said, yeah, I need a dress line, and gave me a project. And then that sort of started my path into children's wear. And I really, what I liked about children's wear was the people were so much nicer. And you didn't have to follow a trend. Like, you weren't chasing the trend all the time. It was just like, it was kids, you kind of did your thing. So I found that it was a really nice place for, like, I liked it. I actually felt there was more creativity in that world. You know, so I stuck it out. And then eventually I did get some full-time jobs, and I was working at this very sort of like mass market place. And they asked me to design a line of dresses for Macy's. And so I said, well, I'm going to go take a day and go out and see what the competition is. And I found myself in these department stores just thinking, oh my God, this stuff is horrible. And it all looks the same. And the fabric is, God, awful. I would never put a child in this, even though I was quite young. There was no reason for me to be thinking about dressing a child. But I knew that there was something missing from the marketplace. Like I knew what people of my generation were starting to change the way they thought about looking and dressing. And I knew that they would eventually be feeling the same way about their children. So what I did was I came away from that one day, I came away thinking, I'm going to start a children's line that's completely different from anything that's out there. And I started very modestly with one dress and one hat. And I did it in 100% linen, which at the time was not used anywhere in children's wear. It was like too precious of a fabric. You know, it needed to be hand washed or dry cleaned, and it was in solid colors. And at the time, I mean, we are talking like rose cabbage print explosion in the marketplace. Like everything was like a crazy floral print. You couldn't find anything that was not in a girl's dress. So this was something, you know, this was something that was like completely missing from the market. I thought was completely missing from the marketplace. And I just had one dress and one hat and three colors in linen, very, you know, very precious. And I sort of instinctively knew that I needed to show this in a way that felt like my vision. So I had a photographer take these very vintagey looking images of the dress on a little girl, and, you know, sepia toned and very, very nostalgic looking. And I went with my dress samples and my image, my photograph, my one photograph. And I went to three stores in New York. One was in Soho, the other was Upper East Side, and the third was actually Barney's. She took my appointment. I sent her the image and I sent her a note. And all three of them saw me. All three of them, you know, gladly let me in the door. But all three of them gave me the same feedback. They said, it's beautiful, but the price is too high. They were, you know, and that was great feedback. It was, you know, fantastic feedback. I didn't quite know what to do with it. I was really sort of young and cocky. So I was like, no, this is what it should cost. You know?
You were probably right.
I think I was right. But I decided to pursue it. And I took a booth at the Children's Trade Show, a tiny little booth with my three dresses, with three hats, and had my little image. And I did it in a very simple way. And again, like if you can imagine, every other booth in that whole trade show was like, you know, crazy print and pattern.
Like somebody threw up Skittles or something.
Like, exactly. And then here I am, like this, like very sort of demure, you know, simple, clean. It was like, I popped out. Even though I had this tiny booth you could have easily walked past, people turned, you know, people's heads turned and they stopped and they asked. And I ended up getting quite a good amount of orders. And then there I was, 23, 24 years old, in business.
And tell the audience the name of your brand.
It was called H.M. Wogglebug.
And why did you name it H.M. Wogglebug?
I named it H.M. Wogglebug was a character in the Wizard of Oz books, so the original books. And he, to me, it symbolized really that period of childhood. The Wogglebug was very curious and he fell out of the window. He lived in a children's classroom and he fell out of the window and he grew into life. And he sort of symbolized this like idea of fantasy, but he dressed really dapperly in the images. He was like very, very dapper, very buttoned up. And there was all sorts of symbolism in that. And it was a whimsical name. It meant a lot to me, you know, that choosing that name. Again, the name, people were like, what is this? Why? I think that, you know, it was, but I grew the business. I was able to sell to, you know, eventually Barney's, Barney's, Bergdorf's, Saks.
Did you have to lower your price point or did they come up to meet you?
They came up to meet me.
Oh, haha, you were right.
They did. I mean, I think I think what she really wanted was to see that I could produce, you know, that I could ship some goods before she really wanted me. And the store in Soho became one of my best customers. Like she, and, you know, she just became, you know, every season, year after year. So eventually I was able to gain those customers that first turned me down, but I was able, you know, I had the business for a decade and it was fantastic. Like it was just sort of creatively very satisfying because I did everything from soup to nuts and it was my vision and I was able to tell the story I wanted to tell. I was able to build a team. I was able to hire people. Eventually I was able to hire people and that was amazing too, to go from entrepreneurship when you are doing every single thing yourself to actually then being able to hire people who can help you. And they're there to help you and they want to help you, which is like, what? You're here to help me. Yay. You know, and you get to choose them, get to choose those people who help you. So it was really fun. Like, you create that environment, you know, you're able to even control that. Like I want a workplace where people are happy. I want a workplace where people enjoy coming to work. They're not afraid to ask me if they need to pick up their kid at school or, you know, go to a funeral, whatever it is, you know, like that was something that for me was important to have, to even provide a place for people that wanted to be there.
It's beautiful. And where were you manufacturing?
Oh, good question. I started the business manufacturing in New York City and eventually I did always keep a piece in New York City, but then eventually moved a lot of the manufacturing to South Boston, Dorchester, Fall River, Massachusetts. So New England based, did a little tiny bit in Toronto, but most of it was domestic to the Northeast. That I would say was probably one of the reasons the business came to an end. Not entirely, because we could have kept going on, but the business was growing. But it wasn't, we were in, you know, over 600 specialty stores and all of the top department stores and catalogs, but we weren't able to take it to the next level manufacturing wise in the US, but we weren't, at the time, we weren't big enough to hit minimums overseas. So we were in that really difficult place and it was the dot-com era. So when we went out to try to find funding to sort of take it to the next level, everybody was like, oh, we love the story. It's so beautiful, such great product, great images, but we're going to invest in this dot-com business. We're not going to invest in this fashion business. So eventually just kind of took a really hard look at, you know, we could go out on a high note with all that great, you know, doing exactly what I set out to do. And we decided that was the best thing to do. And I, you know, it was so, 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 so bittersweet for me because it was a good run. But again, even at that, when I closed the business, I was early 30s. So I was quite young, you know, I was really quite young. And what it enabled me to do was come back into the industry at a really high level. So, you know, I left the industry as an assistant designer, started my business, and I was able to come back into the industry at a director level. So that there was a benefit to that. You know, I probably could have come in back in as a CEO thinking about it. But
who wants to be one of those?
I don't want to be.
Well, some people do.
So anyways, that, you know, it did give me that was a really benefit. And the other huge benefit was coming back into the industry, knowing the business from end to end. And that really, I think, made me an asset to most companies because, you know, designers are designers and they sit in their design room and they have to interact cross-functionally. But I actually understood why the cross-functional partner was asking me to do that task or needed that on a certain timeline because I had been through the whole process over and over again for a decade myself doing all of those things. So I think I came away from my company with such great skills, you know, that made me an advantage in most businesses I went into. And then I eventually went into very corporate fashion. I worked for Baby Gap. And then I went on to spend a decade at Tommy Hilfiger Kids, being the VP of design for all of Kids product there. So I did, you know, it served me well, that training on the ground.
Training on the ground from domestic manufacturing to like, then where else have you manufactured product and what other kinds of facilities have you visited and where?
Sure. Like that was the great part of working in corporate fashion is because you go from, you know, I was driving, you know, 30, 40 minutes to the factory when I had my own company, but then all of a sudden you're manufacturing in all over the world, Korea, China, India, you know, you name it. And so you're able, at Gap, I literally traveled around the globe and got to see all kinds of manufacturing facilities that were on a gigantic scale, which was such another great learning, right? To go from like how it's manufactured in a tiny little factory in New York City or in Massachusetts to these crazy assembly line factories and automation in other parts of the world was fantastic. And then also the travel, you know, the travel for inspiration when you come back in at a director's level and you're working in corporate fashion, their budgets are so much bigger. So you're able to travel just for inspiration or to go to the fabric show.
Yes, I think you like Antwerp and Paris, right?
Yes, I love them both. I love travel. So it was great. It was amazing to have that opportunity to travel. It really was. And to build teams again, you know, in a different way. Because at this point, I was only building the design team. Whereas with my own company, I was finding production people and all the other salespeople and sewers and you know, you name it. Here you're building design. And that's where you really get, for me, my sort of nurturing sense came into play, because when you're building designers, you sort of know their path and you know I was able to impart some of that end-to-end knowledge that I had learned having my own business onto somebody fresh out of school who may just be, you know, eyes wide open and trying to figure it out. So I think that it also made me a good cross-functional partner, because, you know, where people in the industry, there's this perception that a designer is like just creative and they always want the craziest, you know, most expensive thing. But for me, I knew that that wasn't realistic. I knew that, you know, production has these deadlines, sales has these deadlines, and I kind of understood all of it. So it really made me, I think, a good cross-functional partner in that regard. I think people would say that I was realistic, a realistic designer.
That's it sounds like an oxymoron to a degree, but not really. As the wife of a designer, I know it's not true. But I think like, and so what do you feel like you're the most proud of?
There's nothing I'm not proud of. I certainly am proud that I had the blind faith in myself to take the leaps that I've taken, you know, across from point A to B. But I'm also proud when I look back now, you know, after this long of a career, to look back, I'm really proud of the people that I've been able to take with me, who still consider me a friend and a mentor and somebody they ask for advice, even if we haven't worked together in, you know, 15 years. I feel very proud that I've made connections like that along the way, because I think when you're young, you have all these aspirations in creativity and making your mark on the world. But I think when you start to get older and you look back, you're like, you know, I'm really happy that these people, you know, that I was able to keep all these people in my life, in my world.
Well, I'm one of them. I'm not even going to, we promised not to mention what year we met.
But there's a lot to that, I think, in life.
But there's one thing I kind of wanted to dig into a little bit more before I ask you what's next for you. And that's like when you were at Parsons School of Design, you said you built confidence. But can you tell us more about like what you tapped into from a skills standpoint and what you actually did to be able to gain that confidence?
You know, I didn't enter Parsons as an amazing fashion illustrator, and what I always, you know, at the very beginning of Parsons, fashion school department in general, I struggled with getting I had ideas about what I wanted those clothes to look like, but when I drew them, they didn't look like what was in my head. And so there was this, for me, it was that first 2 years were super frustrating because I knew what I wanted the garments to look like, but when I drew them, they didn't look that way. But what really helped me get me to that point of, you know, being able to just draw what was in my head was the repetition, was the constant 75 croquis a week. Put your ideas on paper, never stop sketching. Look at clothes, look at the way they fall on the body, look at the way that fabric is. Really, 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 really becoming a student of that, you know, what you are studying. And I think so much of that is, you know, we fast track a lot of things these days, but I think what is gained when you actually spend a lot of time in a discipline is that you do become very confident. And, you know, like I went from like my junior year where they were like, huh, whatever, she's, you know, like I could see the professors and the dean and everyone sort of dismissing me, to like coming back the second semester, my junior year, with a project and the dean saying like, where did this come from? You know, like, and the, you know, and that to me was like, okay. And there was also something too about, I think, instinct, you know, like I always had an instinct of what's coming. And so even at Parsons, everybody else wanted to do evening wear and, you know, send all these like beautiful ball gowns down the runway. But I was living in the East Village and sort of living this, you know, East Village life. And I saw that this was becoming like fashion. Like it was really the start of like sportswear as high fashion. And so what I designed for my senior thesis was, you know, in cotton denim, sweater knit motorcycle jackets. Like it was completely different from what everybody else was doing. And I got calls after the runway show from Donna Karen and Mark Jacobs, who was at Perry Ellis, because Donna Karen was just starting DKNY and she understood that this was coming. Like the sportswear was going to be a bigger part of the world, you know, the world of fashion. And I think, you know, Mark, I just had this young aesthetic and I think he sort of related to that as well. But I think that's even with my own business, you know, like this instinct of like, wait, all this stuff is really weird. And why, you know, like no one's going to want this in a couple of years. So I think that the confidence led me to I've always had the instinct, and then you put the confidence with the instinct and it really gave me an edge.
Thank you. I love that.
You're welcome.
And what's next? Or what are you up to now?
So I've been, for the past couple of years, probably 3 years, I've been consulting, and it's been really, really, really fun to take on new projects and sort of push my skills a little bit. I've been able to be creative director, meaning like going on photo shoots and really, you know, working with photographers and stylists and figuring out the look and feel of a campaign. I've been able to work with companies big and small. Like some companies come to me and they just want to know how do I grow my children's wear business? How do I get it to the next level? And I've been able to consult on that. Some people want to elevate their product, and so they come to me and I'm able to, you know, work with them in their design aspect and how to elevate it. What are the details? What are the fabrics? Positioning, those type of things. So it's been really, really fun, lots of work, lots of balls in the air. But that's, you know, when you once an entrepreneur, always an entrepreneur, as I think you could agree. So you kind of know how to do the juggle and the hustle.
Thanks so much for that. Lisa, it's been awesome talking to you. I learned some things, and I know the audience did too. Thank you, CoLab, for having us.
Thank you so much, Celeste. Always a pleasure. And I'm really happy you were able to talk to me and interview me. And thank you, CoLab.
Thanks so much for being here for the CoLab Career Stories podcast. Please follow us on social media at Join the CoLab and sign up to become a member and share your story at jointhecolab.com.